take a minute to check your social battery. How's it doing? It's easy to ignore our needs and spread ourselves too thin. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. BetterHelp offers affordable online therapy on a schedule that works for you. Start the process in minutes and switch therapists anytime. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/popcastpod today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/popcastpod.
Welcome to the New York Times Popcast, your Dunkin' Scrunchie of music news and criticism. I'm your host, John Caramonica.
You turned our song down, baby, what for? You had lit candles on the dashboard. Red roses growing out of the door.
You obsessed with Popcast? Me too. You know we're coming with the rare Addison Rae single. It's called Obsessed. A lot of people talking about Addison this week, although perhaps not for the reasons that she would have wanted. That is her new song. She was on The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon to promote that song among various other ventures, but caught a little bit of heat for doing a skit that involved some listless dances that were TikTok dances, and the skit did not credit the choreographers. Which, if you spend any time on TikTok, you know that that is verboten. That is not how you do it. It caused certainly one or two rounds of negative news cycles about Addison, but it really, to me, spoke to a larger thing about how TikTok handles dance credits and originality and the way that white influencers often get famous by using dances that were choreographed by young Black choreographers or just dancers, kids who are dancers. And it got me thinking, we need to have a big picture conversation about how dance and choreography functions on TikTok. And so, you know, if we are having that conversation, you know that there's only one person we're talking to, Taylor Lorenz. Taylor, you are here. Hello.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Come on. Who else? Who but you? So, look, we have a lot of ground to cover. Obviously, I feel like the immediate conversation is about this Addison situation. We'll come back to the Addison situation because I feel like it will make more sense in the broader context. But I think what I'm hoping to get under the hood of today is I want people to understand not just how dance functions on TikTok, but how dancers and dance credits kind of created their own layer of discourse and layer of micro fame people in these spaces. And really, when you did the piece early last year about the Renegade and Jalea, that felt to me like the breakthrough moment in terms of what I was seeing on the app, in terms of people being sure to go out of their way to credit dancers, or rather credit the choreographers for the dancing. Can you talk a little bit about what was happening pre-Renegade? How disorganized was it in the TikTok and the Dubsmash ecosystem? How disorganized were choreography credits and the dance community, as it were?
It's been really interesting to watch the concept of dance credits kind of come to TikTok. Before, you know, I wrote my story and all of this, you know, debate erupted over the Renegade, TikTok had kind of come onto the scene really in 2018 when they launched in the US. And for the first year and a half, there was really no system of dance credits. Young Black kids were developing these really viral dances on apps like Dubsmash, Funimate, and Instagram. And then they were kind of being co-opted by white TikTokers who never gave credit. So in the Dubsmash and Instagram dance community, there's actually a long history of credit. So it's understood with popular dances from Instagram dancers. For instance, they'll usually have a hashtag for the dance and they'll have DC, which is dance credit, and they'll tag the person. And that's been sort of the standard operating procedure for pretty much everyone on these other apps in those dance communities, but was not on TikTok.
And were those choreographers on those other apps, was it historically always younger Black kids, or was it professional choreographers as well? Like, where did the motivations come from? Was there a sense of the racial equity issue on these other apps, or was it that there were higher powered people who were doing the choreography who were demanding credit? How did it function?
it definitely wasn't higher powered people demanding credit. What it was is really like a grassroots movement. You know, a lot of these kids, you know, I wouldn't call them professional choreographers, but they're affiliated with really well-known dance studios like Dance 411, I think it's called, in Atlanta. There's just a lot of like very young, very online kids that are making these viral dances. And it's more like they want to see who's doing the dance, and they want, it's just kind of like the community norm. It's not even like they want to like profit off it. It's just like, hey, I want to see who's doing my dance, or like, oh, I did someone's dance. I want them to notice me. So I'm going to use the proper hashtag and tag them. It's just kind of more like of a grassroots thing. And it wasn't really being co-opted by people outside the dance community. It was really like these dance credits were a way for the dance community to kind of like keep track of who made what dance and who was collaborating with who, you know?
To talk to each other, in essence.
Yes, exactly.
And it's also worth noting, it's stepping outside of the apps, you know, choreography is like one of those little, or choreographer, I should say, is one of those little or under-heralded job positions within the pop star ecosystem. In the age where everybody's on Instagram or everybody has social media, yes, you know more now about choreographers than maybe you knew 10 years ago. You know more now about stylists than you did 10 years ago, about hair folks, makeup folks, things like that. Choreography has always been in service of the pop star. And a lot of the great choreographers of the 80s and the 90s, you know, whether you, even like a Laurie Ann Gibson figure, a Wade Robson, those are the outliers. Most of the people doing choreography work are, by and large, not known. So there is this pre-existing dynamic where choreographers are already kind of in the shadows, perhaps expecting to be in the shadows. Although it seems that the dynamic online changed that. Before we even get to the renegade moment, there already was this sense of, we want to bring choreographers and give them their proper due.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, there was this huge move for credit just that had come out of those dance communities on Instagram and Dub Smash.
And was there a sense that the people who were making those dances, was the goal to make dances that people did, or was the goal to become the influencers who became the most famous people on those apps? What do you sense the goal was from when you talk to folks like that?
Well, the kids that are making the dances, some of them are just, I mean, at this point, it's become so big. Like, every kid is now making dances because they see it as a vehicle to fame. But certainly, even 2 years ago, most of the kids making dances were not making dances because they wanted to become influencers. They're making dances because they're part of the dance community on the internet. And so it's kind of like, oh, a form of currency, or I made these viral dances, that's cool to kind of participate in this culture. It's not necessarily like, let me become famous. Maybe it's a way to like get the attention of a dance studios that you really want to get at, you know? But a lot of these kids in those communities are incredible dancers. They're true dancers. Like, they want to pursue a career in dance, not necessarily as an influencer.
When the thing moved to TikTok, when things migrated over to TikTok, why do you think dance credit, sort of as a default, did not migrate at that point?
Well, I think that dance became more like mainstreamed via TikTok in a way. I mean, obviously dance has always been so part of every aspect of our culture, but like this specific style of dance where you're kind of doing these, you know, like set moves where you're really only moving the top half of your body in some cases.
Right. Yeah.
That kind of style of dance just like became really popular on TikTok. And I think you saw a lot of people that are totally unaware of the Instagram and Dub Smash dance communities jumping into it and finding dances on the internet and thinking, oh, that's cool, I want to do it. Just the way that like back in my day, like we would watch the Britney Spears or NSYNC video and memorize the choreography and do it over and over again. It's that same kind of impulse.
But now it's Charlie, in essence.
Exactly.
I mean, this feels like 55 years ago, but can we talk about the early days of Charlie D'Amelio? Like basically the pre-Renegade days of Charlie D'Amelio? Because I think, I don't want to be embarrassed and say that I remember your tweet about Charlie D'Amelio, about how every other TikTok is about Charlie D'Amelio, or seeming everything in your For You page is about Charlie D'Amelio. But I do remember how fast that happened. And I remember you tweeting it and being like, okay, it's on and popping.
Just to be clear, though, Charlie did not become famous on TikTok because of the Renegade. That is not...
No, of course. Sorry. This is
not that you were saying that. No, not what you were saying that. But I just think that's important to kind of like communicate. And I think it's something that I think got a little bit missed in the conversation around my story. Like, Charlie basically blew up because she became really popular to duet. So back last fall, when she started to really gain popularity, she did these dance videos where her arms and legs would kind of fly off screen. And it was really popular to duet her because of that, where she was doing these kind of awkward dances. Also, she's not the best dancer. I mean, she's a great dancer. It's not a neg on her, but she's not a professional dancer. And so she just was kind of like relatable in the way that she wasn't great. And then she would, her arms and legs would fly off screen. So people would kind of do reaction videos where they were pretending to be hit by her foot or whatever. And so she became a meme.
The meme for sure. And the relatability, and we'll return back to this with Addison, I think, but the relatability is important because I think the thing that helped Charlie get so big so fast is obviously if you're a young person on TikTok, you're looking for someone that you can aspire to be. But that actual aspiration should somehow be communicated by the person themselves who you're aspiring to be. It's not a traditional sort of like Hollywood superstar dynamic where you're aspiring to be someone who is untouchable or out of reach. There's an aspirant quality to Charli D'Amelio. So if you are aspiring to be the aspirant, that's a very different kind of dynamic than aspiring to be, you know, Scarlett Johansson or something.
Also, it's like, I'm sure you remember when it was like this whole like protect Charli movement, but basically like Charli became such a meme and she was so widely mocked that people started to kind of like see themselves in Charli in the sense that she's this kind of awkward, relatable girl. And, you know, she's not a perfect dancer, but she's so incredibly earnest and pretty kind. And that just resonated with people. And so people were like, we have to protect Charli, you know, and they started to stan her. And then I think that helped kick off that early wave of like, that was really like last winter when that kind of like got her going. And then obviously she was part of the Hype House, which is another vehicle for fame for her. And so it was sort of a confluence of a lot of things. It's not like she just did one dance and then became famous for it.
To reiterate what you're saying, the nature of Charli D'Amelio dancing was slightly imperfect, slightly off, and I think crucially achievable. And this is something that I think kind of is endemic to TikTok, where you see someone doing a thing that you yourself can do. I say this as a middle-aged person who can't do anything. So I hear. Let's just put a dot, 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 so I hear in front of or behind everything that I'm saying. But there is, it's about seeing something that you feel invites your participation, and you'll duet it or you'll stitch it or something along those lines.
Yes. And a lot of times they're doing these dances that are pretty easy to master. I mean, these days dances are a little bit more complicated, but back in 2019 and even early 2020, a lot of the popular dances were not that complicated. It was just kind of very easy to replicate.
How did the Renegade issue, because that's really the breakthrough moment, how was that being discussed online before you wrote your piece? And actually, let's just listen to a little Renegade, a song by K Camp, even though K Camp really doesn't have very much to do with why the Renegade is popping.
Wait. Show me, like I hit the lottery, trip. Watch on how they follow me. Wait, honey's blue, yeah, I got them all on me. Go,
go. The new Starz series, Mary and George, starring Julianne Moore and Nicholas Galitzine, tells a story almost too outrageous to be true. But shockingly, it is. With next to nothing to her name and looking to elevate her social standing, Mary Villiers sets her handsome and charming son George on the path to seduce King James I and become his all-powerful lover. The show is full of wit, scandal, action. You won't be able to look away. Watch the season premiere of Mary and George now, only on Starz and the Starz app.
My name is Thomas Gibbsneff. I'm a journalist at the New York Times. I served in the Marine Corps as an infantryman. When it comes to reporting on the front line, a lot of the same basics are at play. You're looking at the map of where you're going. If you're on a paved road, fueled roads, you know, is there a hospital nearby? Is your body armor affixed with the first aid kit? Does everyone know where that first aid kit is? We arrive into a military position. I get out of the car. I look at my watch. You know, I set a timer, no more than an hour. I'm listening for drones, jets, check in with the team. Is everyone comfortable? And if they are, then we proceed. Frontline reporting is dangerous, but I think nothing is more important than talking to the people involved, you know, hearing their stories and being able to connect that with people thousands of miles away. Anything that can make something like this more personal, I think, is well worth the risk. New York Times subscribers make it possible for us to keep doing this vital coverage. If you'd like to subscribe, you can do that at nytimes.com/subscribe.
The Renegade had just gained huge popularity. I would say it's the first like major viral dance to come out of TikTok. And it was the beginning of this TikTok influencer era. So when the Renegade popped off, it was also when this whole group of influencers and like the Hype House and Sway House, through these two big collab houses, were like coming up. So these influencers, like, they were doing the Renegade. They were also doing every other viral dance, but the Renegade was the most viral dance to ever come out of the app. It's kind of like with like the Shiggy in My Feelings thing when that was all over on Instagram. Like, it's just like one of those things that you see everywhere. Everyone's commenting on it. Everyone's joking about it. Everyone's doing it. Like, it was just all over. It was a dance that was like a little bit complicated, but it wasn't like crazy. You know, it's mostly with your upper body. And so it just became incredibly popular, but there was no system of credit. Like, there was nobody cared about who made it. That wasn't even really something that entered into the conversation for a lot of influencers. It was just like, oh, I saw this cool dance online. I want to do it. And I was interested in who made it only because I remember covering a lot of like the meme world stuff and like the Backpack Kid and some of this other stuff of like people trying to get credit for dance. And so I had kind of come to the story where I was like, okay, I'm going to try to find the girl that made this dance because I'm just curious. It's like the biggest thing on the internet. And people had kind of like seen this old Instagram photo, but no one had really tied it to her offline identity or interviewed her. And so I just kind of decided to do that.
Was it hard to track, or was there a pretty clear breadcrumb trail? Just nobody was picking it up because it wasn't understood that that was a thing that we should be paying attention to.
No, it was hard to track. And it was hard to track because, one, things like viral dances move across platforms constantly. So I think a lot of people were crediting this guy on TikTok because he was the first one to do the Renegade on TikTok.
To port it over,
but he had found it on Instagram. You know, I ended up finding it basically through Dubsmash, you know, was able to get in touch with Jalea, but there's no good system of credit to find who invented something. You have to kind of interview lots of people and kind of poke around and try to find it. And then also verify it, because a lot of people say they invented something and they didn't.
When you were first reaching out to Jalea, how much of the conversation was about desire for credit? How much of it was it about the racial imbalance of who gets noticed and who doesn't get noticed? Where did those conversations kind of like start from?
Well, I did reach out to Jalea. She kind of goes to me, and I ended up getting in touch with her mom and kind of explaining that her daughter had created this viral thing. And she was like, okay. And so, you know,
mom, talking to the reporter.
Kid, oh my God. Yeah. It's always better to get in touch with their parents because their parents can kind of be like, understand the whole situation of it. But the thing is that Jalea herself is just very like, she's an incredibly talented dancer. But she's also like, at the time she was like a big Charlie D'Amelio stan. And she just wanted credit because she felt like these people were doing her dance and she just wanted people to know. It wasn't like she was cloud chasing. It's just like, oh my God, this thing I made is all over and nobody knows that I made it. She had tried to comment actually a lot below people's videos and she just wasn't getting traction. And she was not the only one during this time that was having her dances co-opted. There had been, as dance became more popular and as these influencers started to pop off on TikTok, a lot of them were taking dances from the Dubsmash community. So there was this girl, Naya, she did the Holy Moly Donut Shop, another young Black Dubsmash dancer that, you know, Addison and all these other people had done those dances. So I think like my story was pegged to Jalea because it was the most viral version of this. But I mentioned a bunch of other dances even in the story, just being like, this is part of this bigger trend of frustration from these kids that are budding choreographers. I mean, if you go on Jalea's page now, you can see like she's probably going to be a very successful professional dancer and is not just an influencer.
And again, it's important to emphasize the distinction between those two things, because influencers dance, but but that doesn't necessarily mean that dance is what they're best known for, or that they're the best dancers, or that that is the number one skill set that they bring. But it is sort of like speaking the language of the app upon which they are doing their influencing. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think the big thing here is that these influencers came in and sort of engaged with the dance community by doing their dances, but didn't follow the norms of that community. And that's what really rubs people the wrong way.
How quickly, because I feel like the reckoning came pretty quick after your article. I started seeing DC popping up everywhere. I feel like the racial aspect of it was really, really discussed widely. How quickly did you see things change?
It was really quick. I was actually surprised because this is not the first time that we've had this conversation. Like, we've had this conversation so many times, like in the media. You know, I'm not by any means the first person to write about this. As I mean, I myself have like written about sort of this sort of thing in the past. I think it just struck people at the right time. And TikTok was so new and these stars were so new that it was like, it just kind of was like right place, right time for part of it. But yeah, I mean, it was pretty black and white overnight where it just suddenly was like not acceptable to not credit the people whose dances you were doing.
Did you sense any resistance from the influencer community to participating in dance credits?
I mean, there definitely were some influencers that were like, this is stupid or blah, blah, blah. But they're shut down pretty quickly by the commenters. And I think everyone kind of realized.
And that's the other thing. You know, the comment community on TikTok is so active and so loud. And so I think generally oriented in the direction of justice, kind of, that I think things, like you say, they do get shut down pretty quickly when they're not going in that direction. I mean, I'm sure there's some dark corners of TikTok where the comments don't tend in that direction, but at least where I live on TikTok, they tend to be oriented that way.
It just became the norm. And like, once the big creators are doing it, like Charlie, and you know, Charlie pretty much was like, oh my God, okay. Like, this was not something that she ever thought about, but she pretty much started doing it. You know, she was like, oh, okay, this is what I have to do now. And this is my responsibility as a big creator. And once you see Charlie doing it, the smaller creators are more likely to do it as well.
Do you think that even with DC being ubiquitous, people who are new to the app, do you feel like those people are likely to think that the influencers are the ones who also pioneered the dances? Or do you think the way the app is structured kind of makes it clear that they're not?
I think everyone knows that most of these influencers didn't invent their dances. I mean, I can't say what like children think. I mean, I don't know. But I think a lot of these like 9-year-olds are actually pretty aware of this stuff because they're so immersed in that culture. But I think, you know, these kids are doing so many dances. At this point now, a lot of more of them are more open about where they get the dances from, or they, you know, another thing too is like, to collaborate with the person who made the dance is like a thing, you know, a lot of people will be like, oh, I'm doing it with the original person. And that gives them both clout.
Your article came out last spring, February, March, kind of last year.
Yeah, like right before COVID.
And then through COVID, obviously, you have Savage and you've got WAP. Let's listen to Savage just for a second.
We'll forever be that, forever be that. Yeah, that's my trash, you the maid, so you bagged him. I'm a savage, yeah. Classy, bougie, ratchet, yeah. Sassy, moody, hey. Nasty. Hey.
Yeah. So by the time these songs get popular, the dance credit is built into the thing. It's part of the grammar. Do you find at that point that you're starting to have a micro level of celebrity, not celebrity, kind of like tastemaker choreographers? Or I guess what I was seeing was that the choreography can kind of come from anywhere. It could come from a 13-year-old. It could come from someone who's a professional in their 20s, or it could come from someone with a lot more experience who's actually working with celebrities. What did you see in terms of the choreography community?
I think at this point, these dances can come from anywhere. I have noticed more like professional choreographer people. I think the guy who made the WAP dance is a professional choreographer. So there's people like that that I think now are in the game because they also recognize that like making a popular dance is a good way to get clout online now. You know, like if you make one of these dances, like you're going to be known. So it's kind of more of a mix. I wouldn't say it's not quite the same as like a year and a half ago where there was this clear path from like Dub Smash to TikTok. It's now it's kind of like coming from all over the place. a lot of these celebrities are trying to like make their own dance challenges too. Like, I'm pretty sure that Jason Derulo one was made by Jason Derulo.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think for whatever reason in the moment, I hadn't realized that was the case. But I think in retrospect, that is accurate. And it also it was so simple, you know, which makes sense that it didn't necessarily come from, even though Derulo is a good dancer, that didn't come from like a professional choreographer really, or even like a really, really, really energetic kid. Just came from a guy being like, please dance to this, you know?
I mean,
like,
Justin Bieber has tried to kickstart his own things too. I mean, when he was like doing all those dances to the Yummy thing, like a lot of celebrities, I think, are trying to make their own dances happen.
I mean, this is the thing. They just feel really misfires. I've got to assume also in the same way that sort of like smaller influencers are often paid to develop kind of what passes for like an organic buzz with songs. I assume that's got to be happening with choreographers as well.
Yeah. I mean, you can pay people to do specific dances or dance to specific songs. A commodity now.
Yes. And, you know, virality, sadly, is always engineered. And we do our best to kind of separate the wheat from the chaff when we're writing about it. But sometimes you just some of it sneaks by, sadly enough. The reason I was sort of wanting to talk about dance credits this week was because of what happened with Addison. I feel like very conflicted about that situation. So just to map it out in case folks are not totally plugged in, Addison Rae is one of the biggest TikTok influencers and who is kind of on the path to a Hollywood or quasi Hollywood career, you know, starring in a Netflix, She's All That remake. There's a lot happening with Addison. She was on The Tonight Show. And as part of being on The Tonight Show, you have to do goofy sketches. One of the sketches she did was sort of demonstrating a series of recently popular TikTok dances. And there were no dance credits listed on the video at any place. And what ended up seeming like relatively innocuous ends up as kind of like a huge kerfuffle about appropriation and racism and so on and so forth. And I was pretty surprised by that because, well, for a couple reasons. One, Addison is not primarily or solely known as a dancer. We talked about this a little bit the other day. Do you want to talk about what Addison kind of is known for and what her presentation on TikTok is, broadly speaking?
Addison is, like, I would say, like, the prototypical influencer. I mean, she's known for her beauty and her style. She's not a dancer. She's never been a good dancer. She's never really known for dance. She's...
What about Sherry, though? What about Sherry?
Oh, my God, you know? Her mom. I know. She has this, like, Kardashian-esque family where they're all kind of on social media. And she's obviously also very tight with the Kardashians. She's appearing on Keeping Up with the Kardashians this season. She's obviously an actress starring in the She's All That remake. She has a pop song. She is like the most Hollywood hustler girl you've ever met. Like, she just has her hand in everything. She's a worker. She's a face of American Eagle. You know, she's launched her own beauty line. Like, she's famous for so many things. And I wouldn't say that dance made her famous. I think she's famous because she's an aspirational figure.
Yeah, and it also seems like, and again, in the way that dance is just the grammar of the app, there are plenty of Addison Rae dance videos, but rarely, like when I see a Charlie dance video, I'm like, this is like it has like a heavy level of intentionality in it, even if it's not like the most perfect representation of the dance. It has like a heavy level of intentionality. Like, Charlie is more of a dancer than Addison. When I see an Addison dance video, it kind of seems like, oh, okay, I guess we'll toss this off. You know, like, we'll pull it together real fast. It doesn't seem like it's central to her personality and presentation.
No, people love the way she looks and the way that what she wears and her facial expressions. And she's very like charismatic. And I think people like that charisma. And yes, she dances because everyone on TikTok dances. But, you know, like, her relationship with Bryce Hall was like this fascination for so many kids. He's another huge influencer. Like, she's kind of this person that people are just obsessed with.
So anyway, she goes on Fallon, which is like, definitionally, it's a late night show. It's like corny by definition. It's out of touch definitionally. And then she ends up doing one of these skits and gets huge blowback for it. And what ends up happening is a lot of these dance creators who did the dances, I think there were maybe 8 or 9 dances that she did the steps to, end up getting their own Fallon segment maybe like a week later, kind of as a group. I had a couple thoughts about that Addison moment. One, as we've been talking about, she's not known as a dancer. This is just like you go on a late night. It's like you have to do a dumb thing. It's like maybe you're playing the drinking game, or maybe there's all kinds of silly things that you're forced to do in this kind of like clueless context. The TikTok skit felt like it belonged to that, but I think it was not viewed as belonging to that. It was viewed as being an extension of the dance world of TikTok. The second thing is there was a video that was circulating with the originators of the dance side by side with Addison, and Addison looking like very listless, just phoning it in. And I also think like when you're in the setting of like a late night show, which is like kind of for older folks and people who don't know anything, whoever was in that position, I think generally would have done the most basic, almost like verging on instructional version of the dance. That's kind of how it read to me.
Wasn't it kind of like a challenge? Like, weren't they changing the music? And every time the music changed, like she had to do it. It was kind of like a skit where it's like, hey, here's a pop quiz. Do you know your top TikTok dances? I'm going to play the music and you have to do it.
And doing it, I thought very much like, at least how it read to me, it's not like I'm the best dancer and I'm going to show you my best version
like
of the dance.
No, it's like joking around. It's like, yeah, I know this dance. Like, it's like, do you know this dance? Yeah, I know this dance. Like, the question was never, is she the best dancer? Of course she's not the best dancer. Of course, pretty much anyone you put her side by side to is going to be better at doing these dances. She's never been the best dancer. That's not why she's famous.
And so, right. So again, it's interesting because the way it circulated was taking all these shots at Addison's dancing. And I think there are probably like two or three actually legit reasons why she danced that way in that setting. You know, it doesn't change the overall kind of critique of like, should the choreographers rather have been credited? But it did seem like it really was a collision of worlds, because the idea about dance credit activism on TikTok and that colliding with the kind of goofy, kind of like aimless skit culture of late night television, those two things just do not coexist near each other. And clearly, like, whoever works on Fallon did not think hard enough about like, hey, should we just put something in the corner just to like prove that we know what's going on in TikTok?
Right. And of course they don't know what's going on TikTok because they work for late night. And so they have no clue about culture, but like, obviously they should have included those dance credits. Anyone that's been paying remote attention to that world would know that that's just the norm, and just that that's like a big national conversation about equality. But, you know, of course, Addison, I think there's a misunderstanding from the kids too, of like what a late night show is and why she's there. Like, she's there to promote and perform this song and to talk about these entertainment initiatives. This is a stop on her press tour. They're not implying that she invented these dances at all. It's just like, she's there to promote something else. And I think that got missed a little bit in some of the conversation around it, where I think a lot of kids were like, oh, so she just got to be on there because she's doing the dances. It's like, no, she's on there as part of this big press tour around her album or whatever.
It's COVID. Nobody's doing anything in real life, or very, very minimal things in real life. There may be some version of The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon. I don't think it exists currently, but there may be conceptually some version of that show where they have room to bring on the hottest dance choreographer on TikTok and give that person a spotlight. I don't think that's how that show currently functions. That's not saying it shouldn't function that way, but I just don't think that's how it actually currently functions. It's a celebrity vehicle, it's a promotional vehicle, and all these other things are just filigree in essence. But we're a little older. We've seen some things, Taylor. Did you catch anyone in the discourse after the fact kind of like drawing attention to that? Because I feel like most of the discourse I saw about it didn't talk about that, at least on Twitter.
Oh, God. Well, Twitter is never the place for great discussion. I did see like the head of content at Dub Smash actually posting about it. And she was saying like, Fallon is in the position of power. This is Fallon's show. Addison didn't produce this segment. She's just a guest. People that produce this segment should know better, and that they should be in touch enough. And you know, we don't know. It's hard too. We don't know what happened behind the scenes. We don't know if Addison had a heads up on this, what her role is. One thing I did notice was I think there was a more nuanced conversation around this actually on TikTok. I think whereas Twitter, it's kind of like a crazy TikTok. There was a lot of discussion on this and discussion around dance. I saw one video by this woman that kind of actually spoke to this, just being sort of talking about the real problem or the root of all of this is, yes, dance credits, but it's bigger than that. It's like, it's all about like who gets famous. And so I thought that she made some good points.
And she seemed like maybe a little bit older and kind of like a little bit more perspective on the bigger picture. But yeah, on Twitter, I mean, obviously a good side-by-side video, it's good copy.
I laughed at those videos and like, obviously Addison looks like an idiot, like, and which is funny. And I think that's why it went so viral too, is like, she just gets destroyed.
Yeah. Did she ever comment? From what I could tell, like her TikTok kind of in the immediate wake of that was kind of on some like, Addison puts on sunglasses, I'm not bothered, you know, like not angry, but kind of like, you know, you can't, like, I'm on to the next thing. That was the energy I was picking up on. Did she ever directly comment on it?
I didn't see her directly comment on it. I'm sure that she has a whole PR team. I mean, she's a celebrity. And I think that's what the conversation should be about, right? Like, that's what I think this stuff with the dance credit, it's like, yeah, that's an issue. But also, let's not forget about like, who gets to be the most popular influencer on TikTok and who succeeds in Hollywood, right? Like, it's very pretty young, conventional looking women. And I think a lot of frustrations that come out in terms of this dance stuff are frustrations with broader issues of inequality in Hollywood.
Yes, the Addison thing at root felt like the conflation of like two actual problems. One, dance choreographers are often not properly credited. Two, white creators are hands down privileged and amplified way more than Black creators. Those are two things happening at the same time that intersect often. And here was a case where they were intersecting, although maybe not exactly in the way that was being spoken about. Do you have any like low key dancers on TikTok that you like and think are good? Like that, who are not kind of in the mix in this way, but who like jump out at you or you're always excited to see?
Oh my God, that's a good question. I'm honestly not really on dance TikTok. I'm on like weird niche. I don't even know what version of TikTok I'm on, but a few dancers that I like are mostly on Instagram. So there's one called, his name is Ray Up Now. There's the Lit Twins who are incredible. They are also based out of Atlanta. And then there's Wuda. It's Wuda. She doesn't dance as much, but she's kind of like in that world. And obviously cool is Neil, which is this kid, Neil, who his handle is cool as O-N-E-I-L. He's amazing. He's done so many viral. He is like a factory for viral dances and he's pretty underfollowed. So give him a follow.
Okay, I want to mention a few folks. Okay, so Carolee, this is on TikTok, Carolee Canella, who I recently stumbled on and then suddenly had like one big, very viral dance that I think Charlie did. Super good. Not all of these folks are choreographers necessarily. Some of them are just getting good dancers. Oh, are you up on, I think it's Gnome Boys, G-N-O-M-E. Are you up on Gnome Boys?
Oh, I don't think so.
Gnome Boys, they're like three or four. They seem like maybe they're in their early 20s, like guys. They're like very, very technically skilled, but like also like lightly comedic. I like them. I think they're really, really good. Claire, that's Q-L-U-R Dean, Claire Dean maybe, or Claire Dean, who was doing kind of a lot of that moment last year where people started doing indie rock dances, like kind of like Phoebe Bridgers type dances, like kind of porting dance culture into that space. She was doing a lot of that work. And then last year, like, was very into Carchill, Lily Massey, not necessarily choreographers, but just people who like dance with like a lot of personality and character. I could chase down the choreographers like for hours and hours and hours, but sometimes someone's particular dance grammar themselves is so satisfying that I like to discover dances that way.
You know who's the best? There's that guy who dances to like Regina Spektor and stuff. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No, tell me.
Wait, oh, he does these awesome dances. Wait, his name is Zoc Jett.
Oh, yeah. Zoc Jett, so good. Oh my God.
So good.
He's so good. And also, we're just going to keep doing this. Kriti, K-R-I-T-H-I, where she dances with her mom.
Oh, I don't follow her.
Kriti is super good. Jennifer Mika, who also dances with her mom, but also is a solo dancer. I think she lives in New York. And randomly, I think Siobhan, who writes about dance for the Times, wrote about Jennifer Mika for like a dance magazine for being like a popping modern dancer who's also good on TikTok.
Oh my God, I love that.
Jennifer Mika, super good. Oh, we could do this for days. This
I is know, like, there's oh, I'm so get, many oh, cool
I'm getting
people.
So excited now. That's, I just want to do a whole episode where I just like go through my follows and just be like, follow this person. This is why they're great. Ugh.
We need a follow Friday.
Seriously. Okay. Well, maybe another episode. We'll go deep into our feeds and like offer some secrets.
Yeah.
The last question. Do you think as TikTok continues to grow and evolve, do you think that dance, broadly speaking, will continue to be as integral to the app? Or do you feel it moving in broader directions?
It's already moving away from dance significantly. I mean, the past year especially, it's just fading and fading and fading. I think dance will always be a part of TikTok because of the music aspect of TikTok, but TikTok's becoming a just a much more rich, complicated social network where people are going to express a lot more like story time, vlogs, stuff like that.
Also, as soon as I started seeing the sadness in Charli D'Amelio's eyes, like last like August, September, I was like, yeah, it's quiet. It's going to be quiet for dance pretty soon. Sad. Sad. But yeah.
It's just not a great, I mean, it's entertaining and I think kids will always want to follow it, but ultimately like there's more compelling formats. And I think people, especially with these big influencers, they really want to feel like they're part of their lives and they want to know how they're feeling and they want to hear from them. And there's better formats than dance to do that.
Taylor Lorenz, always a joy, always a pleasure.
Thank you for having me. It's always a great day when I can come on the podcast.
That's right. That's right. Speak it loud. That is our show. Thank you to the OG Taylor Lorenz. Follow Taylor on TikTok if you dare. Listen to every podcast ever at nytimes.com/podcast. Email us at podcast@nytimes.com or get on the Facebook group or get on the Discord. Subscribe to Popcast if you don't already, which you should, anywhere you get your audio content. That's Apple, Spotify, etc., etc. Our producer, as always, is Pedro Rosado from Headstepper Media. We'll be back next week. Let's go out with a song that soundtracks the dance that Carolee Cannella choreographed and was recently done by Charli and her friend Gemma. This is Britney Spears. It's Britney. Give me more.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.